Hello and welcome to Mohawks Meet the Team series, a podcast dedicated to the team behind creating the strategy title, Old World. We'll get to know more about the team and their work on the project. This week we're joined by Louis, a 3D artist from Mohawk Games, and we learn about the special way that he learned his trade, and much more, so stay tuned. And joining me for this week's episode is Louis. Hello, sir. How are you?
How are you?
I'm great. It's so cool. You are in South Africa.
Yeah, I was born and raised here and lived here all my life. Never been outside of the country. So
this is a first. This is a first for me, right? I've never spoken to somebody in South Africa. I've spoken to a lot of people in a lot of different places of the world, but never from South Africa. So this is cool. I'm excited. I have so many questions. So many questions. Are you ready for this?
Yeah.
Great. All right. Well, so you said you've lived there your whole life. Tell me about what childhood was like in South Africa.
Well, I grew up on the plots and the farms, jumped back and forth. When I was about 9 years old, we moved from a plot to a farm, and we spent like 7 years there, and we moved back then again to a plot. So I've been more of a outside kid, but also a nerd on the farm. So the locals there, as I grew up, I was always, you know, known for the nerdy kid that was running around on the farm. And me and my one friend, Riku Salia, as we grew up, we were very like interested, because he was also like me. We, you know, partly ran around, you know, building bases in the bushes on the farms and so on. We call it bases, but it was basically holes dug everywhere in the farm with some, you know, leaf coverings and stuff to make it, you know, all nice. But anyway, and yeah, we basically learned and taught each other as we learned in 3D and progressed up until I think I was like 17, 18. And yeah, then I decided now I wanted to go into 3D full time. So I was like, okay, now I'm going to work seriously on my portfolio and so on. And I ended up meeting Georgian Vasilkutse. He is an ex character and prop artist that worked for Arcane Studios on the Dishonored series. And I learned a lot from him throughout, like in just 2 years, I learned a lot from him. And eventually I got work here and there and found Mohawk.
Okay, so cool. Podcast is over. We figured it out. Nah.
Quick timeline. Let's
that's the synopsis. That's the too long didn't read version. So, I mean, all right, I have to ask. So you say that you were basically a farm kid that was nerdy. Like, how were you a nerd? Yeah. Like, how did you express that nerddom?
I don't know. I spent three, 4 hours a day when I would be doing from school, because I was homeschooled. And I would just, you know, start fiddling around in Blender, trying to make fire, you know, work with particles, you know, try and model someone's face, but it never worked out because it looked horrible. Everything looked horrible, but it was so much fun. And gaming was also a big part of my life back then, because we were just a bunch of boys and we liked shooter games. We liked especially like Counter-Strike, Mountain Blade. Oh, we had crappy PCs, so all of the very low-end or old games were usually our thing, like the old Call of Duty or Counter-Strike Source. We played it offline, actually. We didn't play it online. Played against bots. It was very, really weird. We thought it was normal, obviously, but apparently it wasn't. Later on, I discovered, you know, playing against bots is not how you play Counter-Strike. You play Counter-Strike against other people.
You missed the whole point of it.
Yeah. But we had fun. I mean, I remember the day I got a new PC, we always play Counter-Strike on this like laggy, you know, low frame rate, you know, gameplay. And then when I got a new PC and everything was so smooth, it was like amazing. It was like a dream come true. And I remember my dad, I think I was 10, and the age restriction for the game was like 16, I think. I couldn't remember. But anyway, he told me, no, we're not allowed to play the game anymore because it's too gory. And I was like, okay, fine. So I went into the game and I don't know how I did it, because if I try it today, it doesn't work. But I ended up uncooking the game and deleting the textures for the game, the blood textures, and basically just censored the game. In the thing, made it like took away the blood so I could play it. That was the start of my, I guess, my gaming passion for making games and getting into the game industry.
Oh, that's awesome. It's really ingenious to kind of like figure out a way to make it okay with dad. Playing it.
Yeah, because it was the only game I had to play with, right? So, yeah.
No, that's cool. So, I mean, I imagine that means that like you had a computer at a pretty young age then, even if it wasn't like the most powerful thing ever, but it sounds like you had a computer pretty young.
Yeah, I started working with Blender, playing around in Blender, I could say, at the age of 9. Blender is a 3D software, just for people that doesn't know, like Maya or 3ds Max. And it was the only free 3D software back then that I could download, because Maya, I didn't know anything about like getting discs from friends. We didn't have any, you know, friends. Maya and 3ds Max was kind of, you bought it, you know, and you had to ship it into the country. So it was really hard to get a hold of a copy of 3ds Max or Maya, or even pirate it. You know, I couldn't do that. I didn't know how to, you know, just to learn. And I don't think there was like any trials, just demo versions of the industry software. So I downloaded Blender and I started working in that. And it was loads of fun. To me, it was a game. I treated it like it was a game or a place to explore, because I love building by nature. Like, I've always had, my mom bought me these robotics kit where you can build Lego, you know, robots and stuff with Lego pieces. So they have like very complex motors and stuff, but it's all in the form of Lego, and I loved it. So yeah, it's building things has been kind of like a part of me since like forever.
Oh, that's really cool. And, so, I mean, I guess you just messed around with it so long that you started to get decent at it. And then you said that you end up meeting somebody later on that was actually part of Arcane, and he took you over under his wing a little bit.
Yeah. He still streams today, and he has a mentorship on Twitch. Nimlot is his name on Twitch. And the work he does is like phenomenal. If you look at not just the art, but the technicality behind it and everything. And he has a passion for creating art for games. And if you ask him like what he thinks about, you know, your art and stuff, he will be straight up honest with you. If you make trashy art, he will tell you that, you know, in the most honest way he can. He will destroy you. But it is a very healthy way, because it sets you on in the right direction, instead of, you know, being spoon-fed or like just being told that, you know, your art's good, you know, your work is amazing all the time, when it's actually really not. You know, so yeah, it's a whole part.
Yeah, no, constructive criticism is always important to growth. You know, like, I think people need to understand that, like, a lot of times when you find somebody like that who's willing to look at what you do and figure out ways you can improve it, but maybe, you know, in a way that's pretty blunt, and that helps.
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish people did that with me. No, I'm kidding. I did get it all the time. But that's cool. So you end up kind of learning from him, and then I guess at some level you became good enough that you started getting hired. That's pretty cool.
Yeah. So my whole portfolio, everything that I've done, I've never been to a school. You know, I don't have a degree or anything. I have a GED. That's it. I didn't even get my matriculation in South Africa. I just went out straight up for a GED, because a GED in South Africa counts as a matriculation. And yeah, that's it. I basically self-taught myself and was mentored by Nimlot, or Georgian. I call him by his nickname.
So you develop your resume and you start to get to a point where you're good enough to be picked up, and then Mohawk comes along. And had you heard of Mohawk before you got hired by them?
I've heard about the Civilization games, because I think when I was 7, Age of Empires, I think, was my first like real-time strategy game, right? And I had a friend that had Civilization back then, and he just gave me a bunch of old games later on. And one of them was Civilization 5. And I remember, it wasn't 5. It was one of the Civ games. But I remember playing the game, and I was like, okay, this is actually fun. But for a kid, you know, the whole concept of it being a board game was a little off-putting, because I liked, you know, the little, you know, Age of Empires army that you can build, and then you just take that whole army and you just watch, you know, your soldiers destroy the other, you know, team's soldiers. Like, it's like a straight out war. And it helps you foster that imagination, I guess, that you have as a kid, you know. And Age of Empires was, I played Age of Empires 1, 2, and 3. And I finished all the games when I was little. I grew tired of it eventually. My taste eventually like shifted into more competitive gameplay. And another thing about me is I'm not just a very, let's say, nerdy or computer-like person. I like to do something active from time to time. So about like 8 years ago, no, wait, 7 years ago, when I was still staying at my parents' home, I started doing combative jiu-jitsu or Krav Maga. And eventually I still do MMA. I started doing MMA like, let's see, 11 months ago, 12 months, almost a year ago. And I compete in the amateur events from some time to time. Obviously, with COVID now, it's like impossible.
Yeah, I was going to ask.
Yeah. So like I'm not just this nerd person, I guess, or just this arty guy. I also run a Wednesday nights from 5:30. I run a self-defense classes with my old Krav Maga sensei. So yeah.
You know, it's funny, I have a similar story, because I grew up in a time where video games were kind of nerdy. Like, not nerdy, like, yeah, cool nerdy, but like you get picked on and bullied because you played video games. And
oh yeah, yeah,
yeah. So for me, like, I just love video games at such a young age, and I started getting picked on that I started to develop hobbies and stuff like that. And like, you know, I used to start lifting weights, and then of course I'd gotten into martial arts and stuff like that because I was getting bullied so badly.
Yeah.
And I still wanted to play video games, but I wanted to be able to defend myself. So it's cool that, like, I mean, it's good to have, you know, a balance in all things, right? You're able, yeah, to do some really great art and then turn around and kick somebody's butt.
Yeah, yeah. To me, the MMA and fighting in general, there's no real difference to me between that and playing games, because both are to some degree a game. You know, you have a person that reacts to your reaction when you fight in an MMA cage, right? It's, you have to have a strategy just like in a game. I mean, if you play Counter-Strike, you know, there's tactics involved, there's strategies involved, there's teamwork involved. And it's like this, it's exactly the same in MMA. It's just, the only difference is it's more physical, you know. And when you play video games, it's just your finger moving, the controller. So you have a lot of other like mental areas inside of MMA that plays a role in your performance. Like if someone kicks you or punches you in the face or whatever, you're in that moment, you can have a positive or a negative reaction to it mentally. And if you grind away at the art, let's say, and you get more experienced mentally, what happens is you get obviously tougher, right? And that part starts seeping in to your daily life as well, at work and so on. So mainly I do it because it gives me a great aspect, you know, mentally, not just physically, but mentally as well. So, yeah.
Yeah, in a lot of ways that flows over, right? Like your ability to like mentally withstand, yeah, something. I mean, it is a physical, yeah, sport, but at the same time, it's also like a lot of mental. Like there's the ability to, yeah, like push through like seriously, yeah, physically challenging things is also a mental part.
Because I've been very fortunate in my MMA, because I train from, I literally, my day goes like this. I wake up at 5, work a little, then from 10 to 12, 12:30-ish, I train, with actually professional athletes, professional South African athletes. And then I come back home, eat something, and I work again, and then I sleep. And that's basically my day for 6 days a week. So yeah, and it actually has helped me a lot with stress, especially, and anxiety and depression, because, you know, there's lots of other stuff that also happened in my life. It's a cheap cure to antidepressants.
Well, it's, yeah, no, I mean, I imagine, you know, something I've got to ask you, and I don't know if I'm maybe pushing a little too far, but I've always had this mental image of South Africa kind of being lawless a bit, like, right? I don't know if that's just an American way of looking at things, but like,
it is.
Okay.
At the moment, it's chaotic. I mean, the other day we had riots and they burned down 17 malls.
Oh God! Wow.
Just because they are, I don't know, they were unhappy about our previous president, because our previous president was very corrupt and he stole a lot of money from people and stuff. And he got sentenced for like 15 months and they were unhappy about his sentence, you know? And I think because of COVID and the lockdowns and stuff, people are also desperate. So they just jumped the wagon and, you know, went off looting 17 malls and burnt it down. Wow. You can go and look it up on Google.
And this is, again, you know, it's an outside perspective, you know, an American perspective of South Africa. But like, I just hear about, like, you know, violent crimes a lot there. And then, like, even recently I saw a video where there was like two people who were driving a money car, right? And they almost got gunned down on the street. And
funny story. My sensei that I talked to is actually friends with that person in the video.
Oh, wow.
And yeah. And he told him the moment he saw that, because there was like these two trucks behind him, right? Pickup trucks. And both of them had tinted windows. And he said they were just following him for like 2 minutes. And when the guy came up to him, the right guy that you see in the film, the moment he saw the tinted windows, he knew it was on. Because what you do is, as a terrorist, obviously, is you don't want to see that you've got guns in the car, right? So they they do things to the cars to hide that they're like armed and so on. But yeah, it was that guy is really fit. He trains every day.
Yeah, you could tell.
Amazing. Yeah.
No, I was gonna say you can just tell based on his reaction. He handled it so well. I mean,
yeah,
he never seemed to freak out. He was very, you know, very focused and capable. And you just, you're getting shot at by rifles. Yeah. Like, good for you, man. That's crazy.
Yeah. He's amazing at what he does. I don't know too much about him, and yeah, but so there's just that.
Well, and the only reason I said anything is because you said, you know, you've had a, you know, maybe a rough childhood or a rough, you know, life in some ways, and I guess I just always assumed that like South Africa is just a hard place to live, and I don't know if that's true or not.
It's not actually a really hard place to live. Like, there's a lot of opportunities here. It's just it's way more dangerous than other countries, but we have a lot of freedoms in terms of business. You know, if you want to start a business, you can just start a business tomorrow. You don't need to go through any like paperwork and licensing and everything. You can just start a business, right? Taxes are a big thing because they do tax you a lot, but other than that, it's actually a great country. It's just the crime that is an issue.
That sounds a lot like America.
Yeah, well, imagine America just two times more violent. That's it.
Have you been to Chicago? Chicago is crazy.
Oh no, I haven't been. I mean, I can't judge. I'm just joking around now. But from the things that I hear and so on, it does. If I would compare, I live in an area that's very safe, I guess. And just the other day, I heard a few shootings away from me, like, I think it's like 6 kilometers away. It was very soft, the sound coming through. It wasn't that loud, but you can hear that there was shooting.
Wow.
So yeah. It's like, you can, if you live in the city, every now and then you hear shooting. It's just South Africa. It's to make the language sound more elegant. You know, like if someone is very intelligent. So if someone is like using very high Dutch words, mixed with his Afrikaans, he immediately comes off as this, you know, very intelligent person.
Is that all it takes? You just throw some Dutch words into your Afrikaans and you're good?
Yeah, some of them. Some of them people don't even understand. And then we're like, what? But there are definitely Dutch words that weren't changed at all during the years. So I think Afrikaans is a mixture between German, Dutch, and something else. I'm not sure.
Well, and that was actually my next question. Do you speak German as well?
No, unfortunately not. Just Afrikaans. Afrikaans became its own language. I can remember, but like a few years ago. I think it was like 50, 60 years ago. It was, you know, classified. Okay, it's its own language now. You can speak it, you know. And you can go to school and be taught in that language and et cetera, you know.
Yeah, I noticed that when I pull up my Duolingo, little history. We were talking about this before the show, but Luis and I was telling him that I had a Dutch girlfriend a long time ago, and she taught me a lot of Dutch. And so I was going back into my Duolingo app and trying to learn some more Dutch. And then I noticed Afrikaans was like an entirely different language within Africa.
Yeah.
And I was just surprised by that. So that must mean that it must be different enough that it's like become its own language itself.
Yeah. If Dutch people speak like really fast, and they can speak really fast, I don't understand them at all.
Oh wow!
I catch some words here and there, but like I cannot. If they slow down, then yeah, I can understand them.
That's cool. Well, so let's go back to Mohawk. Tell me a little bit about what you do for Mohawk.
So basically, I was for the past 10 months. I was a contractor, or am still a contractor currently, for a little bit of time. And basically what I do is I am a 3D artist. So my job entails making 3D models and optimizing them and getting them into the game so that they work correctly in the game, right? So we had a few models that we got from an outsourcing studio, and I basically just had to give them a pass, I guess, and, you know, re-optimize them and make them fit the game so that when you run the game, that it doesn't jeopardize the performance. So I was kind of like also making models, but also making sure that everything works with the programmers and the lead artist, Mark, and so on. Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about your workflow, because you're in South Africa and, you know, the majority of Mohawks in America. So how does that work? How does a lot of the communication go?
We were just, most of the communication is through text in a Slack. It's very similar to Discord. It's just designed for companies to communicate. And basically, yeah, that's it. I work whenever I have time to work. I have my own schedule because we're on different time zones. I like to break up my day and take like a 2-hour break in the middle of my working day, which, you know, I filled up obviously with the MMA. So I would wake up, I would start, you know, checking stuff out, you know, getting awake, start reviewing some of the assets in the Jira tasks that Amanda set up for me. And then, yeah, work, make sure that it works, puts it in the game, post some update in the discussions in Slack, and just communicate with the team to make sure that it, you know, gets properly implemented.
Right. So, I mean, that you don't feel like the distance is really kind of messed up the workflow at all.
Not at all.
That's cool.
It's amazing because I get to dictate how my day goes. It's not a, you know, 8 till 5 schedule, you know, work schedule. So I go to, you know, when you go to when you work in-house, for example, right? So and that gives me a lot of freedom, you know. So when I'm not feeling well the day and I want to break up my, you know, times more, or if someone needs my help, I can, you know, just go in and help them. I don't need to worry about being stuck at work, for example. So it's been amazing, actually, working at Mohawk, to be honest. And the team is so kind. It's awesome.
Yeah, that's great to hear. I mean, you're one of the last interviews I've had with the team, and it just seems like everybody here at Mohawk has been really cool and really easy to talk to. And It feels like you guys have kind of, you know, developed this cool little family, this very weird mishmash international family, but it's a family.
Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing because when people share passion and, you know, because I've they work passionately on the game, because I've worked before on for previous companies, and all they were thinking about was quantity and money. So they don't really care about your schedule. They'll just like pepper you with work, and you end up working 12, 14 hours a day, and you just end up getting burnt out and tired of this industry, which is very sad because it's an artist industry, and art is at its, I guess, highest performance. If you look at it that way, is when an artist does his best. Let's put it that way. That's a better way of saying it. Is when they're actually comfortable and not stressed. Because if you're stressed and stuff, there's a lot of stuff that you skip. You're forced to skip. You're forced to not really think about what you're doing, right? Which is basically art most of the time. You make a model and then you adjust a piece here and a piece there, and then you look at it again and you realize, okay, you know, this shape and this shape doesn't really work that well, and then you adjust it further on, right? And when you are being forced and being told, okay, the deadline is tomorrow for like 2 days of job, you know, you're being forced to skip that, and in the end, the quality deteriorates, and the company doesn't really care as long as they get their money from their clients. You know, I'm talking from an outsourcing studio perspective. So yeah, if the client is like, oh yeah, it looks good, and you look at that asset and you like think, oh gosh, I could have improved so much more on that. You know, like instead of just pumping it out like a machine, eventually it gets to you. Mohawk has given me that freedom to like take an art asset and go back and forth with it and play with it myself, right? I wasn't given any concept for any of the models that I got to work on, except if I, you know, asked for a concept and so on.
Yeah, it's cool to have that kind of freedom, you know. And you said, the ability to like actually take your time with something, that's important, especially with artistic stuff. Well, I mean, looking back on it, because now the game is out and the reception has been amazing, which is awesome because I really love the game myself, and it just seems like a lot of people were like, oh my god, this game is amazing. And I'm just curious to know, like, looking back on it, what was something that you personally were most proud of? Like, what was something that you did or maybe were a part of that you were just most proud of about Old World?
Mostly the art. The art that I got to work on, because I've never worked on a 4X game before in my life. I've always been doing just props or characters, and I never, you know, had to make a building as a model. And when I started working at Mohawk, I kind of had the, you know, other mindset of making buildings, and that's basically constructing an environment, because I'm not very much a 4X player. So I don't play a lot of 4X games. I play a lot of like shooters and RPG games like Skyrim, Witcher, etc. And the world or the game is obviously different, and how you build that world is way differently than you build a 4X game, you know, a top-down 4X game. And it was kind of like a shift for me almost. Like I had to like see, okay, so this is a model I can... And I don't really have to worry about too much details, just, you know, shapes is my priority now, you know, and like the color variation on the textures and so on. And because it's going to be seen from so far away, I cannot really reuse a lot of assets because you'll see the, you know, repetition, etc. It's like it's a whole different mindset from building an environment inside for an RPG game, which I was more, you know, used to or more being ready for, I guess.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. That's cool, though, that you've been able to kind of broaden your horizons a bit. So now you have a bigger, like a nicer resume, right?
Yeah.
More diverse resume. Very good. Luis, so where can we find you online? Are you online on Twitter or anything like that, or on the Discord or anything that we could find you and poke at you and tell you how good you are?
I'm on ArtStation as Luis. But I also stream on Twitch as Pixel Rabbit. Pixel underscore rabbit underscore is my Twitch. And if I get time, I stream my personal stuff there. I'm not much on Twitter, actually. I'm on Instagram as well as the Pixel underscore Pixel Rabbit. Mostly on Instagram and Twitch. Yeah.
Louis, it's been really great to get to know you. And honestly, I really appreciate your insight and input as to what it's like to live in South Africa. Because, I mean, like I said, I'd come into it kind of having this idea and this, like, you know, outside perspective that I wasn't really always sure that was accurate. And I didn't want to, you know, I just want to live my whole life thinking that something like that, you know, like, I know that the world has an idea of what America's like, and I'm sure it's very different than what it's really like. But, you know, for you to have shared your perspective and the way things are is really cool. So I really appreciate that.
Yeah, it's a great country if you've got guts to come here. That's basically it.
That's awesome. And I appreciate your warrior mindset a bit too. I mean, as somebody who has a similar mindset, you know, I know that it takes a lot. I mean, it's not only mentally, but I mean, of course, physically tough to put yourself out there like that and, you know, get involved in mixed martial arts because, I mean, it hurts. I'm not gonna lie. It hurts.
It's funny, you get addictive to that, you know. If you don't train for a few days, you're like, I feel like my body's not sore, my body's not pushed, you know, like you start craving that. It's very weird, and it, like, people are like, what, okay, you like getting hit and you're crazy, which is not really true.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, in the spirit of old world, I feel like there's an ancient quote that basically just says, like, I mean, I'm paraphrasing here, but it's basically that if you don't test the limits of your body, then you haven't lived, you know?
And that's true.
And I just really, truly feel like that. Like, if those who have this, like, amazing body, we have this, like, amazing mechanical body that's capable of so much. And if you don't test it to some level, then, like, what if, like, if you don't push it through and put it through, you know, some physical difficulties, then why? You've it's just like, you're not using it to its fullest abilities. So anyway, Louis, again, very good to get to know you. I really appreciate you taking the time out of your day. And hopefully, I know it's really late there, so hopefully you can go get some sleep now.
This is my sleeping time, so don't worry. I'm off to bed.
Okay, great. Excellent. Well, thanks again, Louis. And until next time, take care.
Take care. Peace.